Welcome to another week of the soon-to-be-rebranded Fox on Sports. I'm Lauren Fox.
And I'm Andrew Hansen.
And we're back here in the studio again, and it's freezing, but there's a bright spot here. The Bedford High basketball season's about to start within the next, week or so. And with that, we brought on the girls basketball coach, Kevin Gibbs, to the program. Coach, welcome.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
So, of course, we've had the opportunity to do a number of games over the last couple of years and have seen a variety of different players come and go. And this year, when you look at the roster from last year to this year, there are a lot of familiar faces. You have a really experienced young roster. The only two that you graduated out of the team were Lizzie Stevenson and Kendi Barnard. Who else do you see taking on some of the big roles this season?
Well, we're very fortunate. Let me start off by saying losing Lizzie and Kendi created some pretty big holes, a lot of points and a lot of rebounds. But we're blessed in that we are returning eight varsity players, including three starters, led by first-team All-State Allie Morgan, who is our floor leader. She's one of the three captains. She's our facilitator. She can score the ball from three levels. She's a high-energy player, a strong defender. And as has been thought by many of the other coaches in New Hampshire, is sure to repeat as a Division I All-Star again, first-team All-Star, and is in contention for Player of the Year. We also return Amanda Jonas, who is a solid interior player who has taken her game to the outside as well. She can easily step out and hit three-point shots, so she's going to give other teams fits. She can play back to the basket. She can defend on the perimeter. She can step out and hit that outside shot. We also return, and Amanda is also a captain, and then the third starter that we return is senior captain Emma Rosenbaum, who I can best describe with an old term. She's a lunch pail kid. She does all the little things that help her team win. She can score. She's a great defender. She is a voracious rebounder. She, at times, over the past week, while trying out different combinations and scrimmages, I actually put her at the point, and she handled that really well. She's an extremely intelligent young woman, and not just in the classroom, but on the court as well. And then another player that we return who we're very excited about is last year's sixth man, Isabella King, who also happened to be our leading scorer. Isabella netted 268 points last year and is on track to having another really strong season this year. Isabella is a high-level player that is being heavily recruited at the college level. In addition to that, we have Marina Braga and Sydney Suazo coming back, who are looking to play increased minutes. And then two sophomores that played a significant role last year, who are going to be in contention for starting this year, guard Safia Mumpini, who, again, can step out and hit the three. She's aggressive on the offensive end and a really locked-down defender. And then Catherine Pennick, who is a forward who is probably tracking to be the next Kendi Barnard in the sense that there isn't a single rebound that she isn't in pursuit of. And what I really like is that Catherine has worked on her game in the offseason and is now a really good mid-range scoring threat as well as an inside scoring threat.
Now, you mentioned a lot of younger players within that, namely Sydney Suazo, Pennick. You had a number of freshmen who saw time last year on the team. Who do you expect being some of the newcomers on this year's roster?
Well, we've gone with a smaller roster this year, looking for the opportunity to have everybody be involved in the rotation. So we picked up two new varsity players, as well as one player who's going to be swinging varsity, the JV. The swinger is one of Marina's triplet sisters, Christina Braga, who is a forward who I think can, as the season goes on, help us out a bit in particular situations, but she's going to get an awful lot of court time on the JV squad. And then we've added Emma Kazajanski. Emma actually sat out last year because she tore her ACL playing AAU the previous AAU season. She was with the team as a manager last year, so she had an opportunity to kind of see what was going on, but she's now playing with us. It definitely earned that varsity roster spot. Emma is an aggressive player on the offensive end. She is learning the speed of the game and a lot of the schemes that we're doing. So she's playing a little bit of catch up, but I fully expect her to be a contributing member of the team. And then pleasant surprise, Sydney Grogan, who's a freshman. Sydney played for Lurgio last year, obviously, and oftentimes the transition from middle school to high school ball can be difficult. The pace of the game is different. The strength of the players are different, and it's the rare freshman who can step in and be an integral part of a varsity team. Last year, we were fortunate. We had three. This year, we have one in Sydney. She is, and maybe I'm going to age myself and date myself here a little bit, but she's the Energizer Bunny. She is all over the place. She is an absolute menace on the defensive end. She's going to really help us in trapping situations and lockdown defense. And what I really like is we're looking for to play more of an up-tempo style this year, and Sydney's really, really strong at pushing the ball out.
Well, Coach, it's fun to hear your descriptions of those players and start to visualize the squad this winter. So before we get focused on opening night next Friday, are there any stories from the offseason we should be aware of? Any highlights from AAU ball or the fall leagues?
Most definitely. Seven of the eight returning players played AAU. As a matter of fact, because we have so many players in the program that play AAU, we chose not to run in any summer leagues, which was, I think, a good decision because you want the kids playing, but not playing too much. We did hold some skills and open gyms during the course of the summer for those kids that wanted to come in, and attendance was very, very strong. As a matter of fact, this year I instituted before school skills and drills sessions. We are allowed by the NHIAA to work in the preseason with players on skill development, and we can't coach them in any leagues or whatever, but I decided because we have so many players that play AAU and other school sports for Bedford, that going in the morning, which the boys have done for years, might be a great way to have them in the gym, working with the coaching staff, and also getting to know each other. And attendance was very, very strong for that. I was very pleased. It's rare that you can find a group of young women who are interested and willing in getting into the gym at 6:15 in the morning before a long school day. And these young ladies did just that. In terms of highlights in the offseason, again, our players, many of them played AAU. I want to take a moment to recognize three players who earned some great accolades. The first is Allie Morgan, who has committed to playing in Florida at a D2 program called the University of West Florida in Pensacola for the next 4 years. Allie is perfectly suited for the style of play that they have down there at West Florida, and the coach down there is fantastic. Amanda Jonas just committed to Rhode Island College, which is a Little East school down in North Providence, Rhode Island. I really like their coach, Jenna Cosgrove, who used to be a D1 assistant at Quinnipiac, has gone over there and is building something really special. Amanda was heavily recruited by a lot of D3 schools, and for what she wants to study, what she wants to do in terms of playing, it's a great fit for her. And then, interestingly, there was a recent article in our state's newspaper that previewed the various programs around the state, and I was absolutely dumbfounded that they did not note Isabella King as a player to watch. On September 1st, which was the first date of players' junior year, that D1 programs can contact players directly. Isabella received 10 phone calls from Division I coaches. She is a heavily recruited player who's going to be playing at a high level. And she certainly isn't under the radar to the other Division I New Hampshire high school coaches, nor is she under the radar to the college coaching community. But I guess she's under the radar to the local sports coverage community. So for them, it'll be a wonderful coming out party for her this year.
She was not under the radar to us.
No, not at all. They could have called us. We could have given an unbiased opinion.
I'm kind of amazed that I did not receive a phone call. But again, you don't know what the resources are and whatever. But again, Isabella, as well as other players, will be a handful for other teams in the state to handle this year.
I was going to say, too, with newspapers, if it were 15 years ago, you'd say that's inexcusable. Now you could say, well, it may just be due to the fact that it was written by somebody who's not a full-time staffer, just given the current state of things. But we're joined by Kevin Gibbs, the coach at Bedford High School, or the girls basketball coach at Bedford High School. And coach, this is year one for you in the head coach role. What was it like for you instead of last year where you came in partway through the season? Now you have that part of the season as well as summer and fall to sort of put your stamp on things.
Most definitely. Bedford, as everyone that's listening is aware, is a very special place to coach. The expectations here are high, and more importantly, the community, the students, the parents, and Corey Parker, the AD, are solidly behind not only the girls basketball team, but all of the high school sports teams. I'm looking forward to building a solid relationship with the BBL and the middle school programs. We have the best feeder programs in the state of New Hampshire, and I want there to be more opportunities for the younger players to see what high school ball is all about. I also want to create a framework where the players and coaches from the high school teams are able to give back and contribute to player development and a love and appreciation of the game. In terms of, you know, putting my stamp on things, I have been coaching for a lot of years. I've coached, been head coach at a lot of other programs, both high school and junior college over the years. So, and having been an assistant at Bedford, I was a known entity to the girls. So the transition last year was easier. And obviously going into this year, I've had an opportunity to put a lot of things in place to make this year hopefully as successful as can be.
It's quite a responsibility as far as the time that you have to put in and the emotional energy that you have to put in as well. Of course, you've made some changes in the offseason, but what changes when you come in basically right at the beginning of the new year, what changes were you able to implement last year?
Well, last year, because we had put quite a few things in place, the changes were kind of, I would put them in the category of minor tweaks. There were small but important changes. We added full court pressure and backcourt trapping on the defensive side of the ball, and then made some changes to the offense that empowered the players to make real-time decisions. There was a tendency to put in too many set plays that the players tend to be more robotic in how they do things. And I'm speaking in generalities now, not necessarily here in Bedford or previous coaching situations, but I'm a believer in putting in an offensive scheme that creates a framework for the girls to succeed. Meaning, if the defense gives you an opportunity, you take it. If the play says you're swinging the ball to the other side, but the C's part and there's an open lane to go to the basket, you go to the basket. And, you know, all too often, a lot of coaches are very set in wanting to run specific plays and running them all the way through. But we have a very, very intelligent, very creative, very skilled group of players. And I tell them time and again, it's like a chess match, move and counter move. And just because we're running a particular play, if the defense gives you something that you can take advantage of, you take advantage of it. And that includes if all of a sudden there's a great two-man opportunity, you clear everybody out and you run two-man. Or you run a triangle, or you go one-on-one. When there's scrimmage on Tuesday night at Merrimack Valley at the end of the fifth quarter, we had an opportunity with a mismatch, got the ball into Isabella King's hands, and she took it to the rack and got fouled as the buzzer went off. And again, that wasn't any set play. It was just an opportunistic situation that you recognize and take it.
Well, coach, with an offensive system like that, you've got to have the players to execute the strategy, and you've got to be excited about the players you do have. You've already mentioned Allie scoring from three different levels, certainly an outstanding point guard and smart enough to make the right decision. And then, of course, Isabella King can score from the outside, score from the inside, and she's so strong with her left hand that, you know, if defenses aren't ready for her, that's a weapon right there. But how excited are you to have the players you do to go out and execute that strategy?
I'm extremely excited. I'm We've had some setbacks in the sense that some illness is already going through the team, which I guess it's better to get it out of the way earlier than later. But more importantly, losing the first 2 days of tryouts to the snowstorm last week did put us a little bit behind. I had pretty much laid things out in such a way that there was a progression leading up to our opening game next Tuesday at Memorial. That included a scrimmage last Friday night against Division II defending state champions Hanover, who we've scrimmaged the last couple of years. And then on Saturday, we put together the first annual Bedford Girls Varsity Basketball Jamboree, which is a real fancy name for I invited 15 Division I and Division II teams in. And we ran a series of half games, 20-minute running time half games, going from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m., where everybody had a chance to have three of these half games. And then following it up, and I scheduled us against some really strong competition because I wanted to give us the opportunity to play some good teams. And then on Tuesday, we went up and played Merrimack Valley. Having put that together, losing 2 days to snow and Bedford having a three-day mandatory tryout schedule, our scrimmage against Hanover was actually the last varsity tryout. So it was bad in the sense that you don't have an opportunity to really put much of anything in, but it was good because it allowed us to really evaluate players in game situations, which, again, the player that's opposite the ball isn't their friend. They're not going to go easy on them. They're going to challenge them. And then it also gave us as coaches the opportunity to see how the girls reacted to real-time, on-the-fly changes and coaching instructions, because that's another thing that you're looking for. You're looking for players that if you call a timeout and you see a situation as a coach that calls for something to be done on the defensive or offensive end and you whiteboard it, you want to have the confidence that you have players that can equate what they're looking at to action on the floor. But again, I think if I would have graded them, we went from probably about a B minus on Friday night all the way up to about an A minus on Tuesday. We really played well on Tuesday night, and that was with only one real practice under our belts.
Yeah, I have to imagine that's a really significant challenge when you're trying to evaluate players and you have some who you know, and then you have a lot of new faces getting out there as well, particularly because, as you alluded to earlier, some of the feeder programs in are so strong, it really places an emphasis on you to try to get as much as you can out of the time that you have with these players. And if you're running a scrimmage against Hanover, that can complicate things.
Most definitely. It was kind of funny before. I've known Dan, the coach at Hanover, for a long time. And we were chatting, and I explained our situation. They, of course, started a week earlier than us. And I said, Al, we're a work in progress. This is actually our last tryout. And, we were chatting up a little bit. Very first time we got the ball on the inbounds, full court man pressure with trapping. And I was like, okay, here we go. He's certainly not going to let up and show any mercy, and I'm glad he didn't.
Yeah.
Because, again, it's the real world, I guess, is the best way to put it in terms of high school hoops in New Hampshire. It's the real world. But it was fun, and I think the young ladies got an awful lot out of it. I know the coaching staff did as well. And they put together a master plan for each of the practices between Wednesday and 2 days ago and next Monday. And we're executing. We have certain things that we need to get in prior to playing the games, and there's an awful lot that we want to get in and change as the season goes on. Obviously, these days there's no such thing as rumors or unknowns. Everybody is scouting. Everybody is trading film. So you have to change things up as the season goes on. That includes what you're doing on both ends of the court, on your inbound plays, on your sideline plays. And that's the fun of coaching. That is really the fun of coaching. It's kind of like a chess match between you and the other coach, and that's invigorating. It truly is.
So, Coach, in terms of mixing things up and other teams scouting you, it sounds like there's going to be some man-to-man pressing this year. Are you planning to mix it up defensively, or are we going to see predominantly more man-to-man, zone, full-court, half-court defense?
Well, our bread and butter is man. Most definitely. We did run some zone last year, a 1-2-2 slide, which is a type of zone defense where the person that runs the point as the ball goes deeper. She ends up all the way down defending the post. And it's very effective. You have to have a very specific type of personnel to run that type of defense. And it probably will be reintroduced this year. But in looking at the personnel we have and their mobility, I've introduced a different type of zone defense, which, in case anybody from other towns are listening into 105.1,
unlikely,
not going to name it, but they'll see it. It's an extremely effective aggressive zone that shows different looks, and again with the length that we have. And the lateral speed that we have, I think it's going to be good for us to use from time to time. As far as full court pressure is concerned, full court man is going to be a part of what we do. There'll be some full court zone thrown in, and there'll be some trapping involved as well, especially with some of the quickness that we have. I think some run and jump will become a part of what we do. And again, the key thing is if you are scoring the ball, you're not having to defend. And our style of play, we're looking to be more up-tempo this year, looking to run it out. We've been working a lot on transition and responsibilities and spots as opposed to roles. Because, you know, if you wait for somebody, someone who's designated the point guard to get to the outlet spot, then that's going to slow things down. So it's a spot. First person there is in the outlet spot, and that's our starting point for getting the ball up the floor. And everybody, the way we've been running it, everybody is running the rim, everybody's running weak side, everybody's running strong side. So everybody has an opportunity to know what the spots are that we're looking to get to, as opposed to you're a three, this is where you go, that type of thing.
So, Coach, and for our listeners who are just joining us, we're joined by Kevin Gibbs, the coach of the girls basketball team at Bedford High School. It really sounds like you have a blueprint in place and you're executing upon that now. How would you describe the culture of the program right now?
Well, I'm a firm believer that culture comes from within, not from the top down. It's important in order for people to, in order for players to be invested, they have to be a part. And to this end, I met with the captains many times. I shouldn't say many, but multiple times over the summer to discuss what was working, what had worked for us, what we needed to improve, what we needed to change. The goal was really to create a framework that's inclusive, positive, and meaningful. So to that end, we introduced the before school skills sessions in the fall. We participated in a very high level girls high school fall league down in Massachusetts with some of the top New Hampshire and Massachusetts teams. Bishop Girton was there, Manchester Memorial was there, along with Central Catholic and, you know, St. Mary's out of Lynn. Some really strong competition week in and week out. We have changed up our pre-practice warm-up routines. We're getting into the weight room now three times a week. We're doing weekly film sessions. A lot of changes like that many of which were suggested and requested by the captains as things that they felt would be more meaningful for us as the season started and as the season goes on, and I'm in agreement. And then what's really important is I'm a proponent of the team being like a family. I on everything that I put up, our practice plans and handouts for the girls and whatever, I've adopted the very simple Hawaiian term, ohana. It is a Hawaiian phrase that means family by association. Not necessarily by blood, but by association, a coming together, and these girls have already really embraced that. They're coming together in a lot of different ways. The other thing I do is I empower everyone to lead in their own way. We don't have freshmen, sophomores, juniors, and seniors. We have varsity players, and if a sophomore sees something that needs to be fixed or is capable of helping someone learn something on the floor as we're running through things, they're empowered to do so. This is not Kevin Gibbs, you know, telling everybody what to do. My staff is empowered. I have brought on a fantastic varsity assistant coach who I will tell you about in a moment. But I would be remiss if I didn't mention the leadership, the mentoring, and the role modeling that this year's captains have shown has been outstanding. I mean, it's very easy to coach when you have players like Jonas, Rosenbaum, and Morgan to assist you.
It certainly sounds like it would be, and I know you have a meeting that you have to run off to because we can't take your time all day long, but who did you bring on now that our interest has piqued about that?
Her name is Jordan Grant, and for people who've been around a while, they might recognize the name. I actually, many years ago, was coaching at another New Hampshire high school, and Jordan played for Concord, and she was fantastic. She was a first-team All-State player. She earned a scholarship to play at Franklin Pierce University, then transferred over to the University of Southern Maine to play for New England Hall of Famer Gary Fifield, and she had a tremendous career. But even more importantly, when she graduated, she went into coaching high school in Maine. She's been a JV coach over there for the last 5 years under some really strong head coaches and for some really strong schools. And her personal life, her professional life, brought her back to New Hampshire. And I've coached AAU for about 25 years now, and I was at a tournament up in Vermont, and I bumped into Jordan in the lobby at St. Michael's. And again, we've known each other for a while, and she coaches for the Southern Maine Shock. And we started chatting, and she said, "Oh, I'm coming back to New Hampshire. Are you aware of any openings that there might be?" And I said, "I happen to know of one. I'd love for you to join the staff." So she and I are like two halves of a whole. We approach the game the same way. We teach the game the same way. A lot of the things that we like to do are similar. As a matter of fact, our AAU teams, we had a chance. We expected to play each other in the semifinals at a national tournament down in Washington, D.C. this past summer. We were so hyped about playing each other, we both got to win the game leading into that. So we both got eliminated prior to playing each other. But the girls really like her. I really like her. And she's a really great addition to the coaching community here in Bedford.
Well, it sounds like you're on track for a great year. A lot of good leadership with the team. And we wish you all the best. Can't wait to get out there on the court with you and broadcast some of the games.
Thank you. And just one last thing. Come on in. You can't beat the price of admission. This is a group of young ladies that fully deserve the support of the Bedford community. It's a great brand of basketball to watch, and they would appreciate having some full stands to cheer them on.
Allie Morgan was repping everybody else's sports in the fall. Now she needs to rep her own. It's the winter season. She needs to get some crowds out there.
I got to tell you, you got that. I mean, if it's a, and to use a term that's being overused these days, if it's a quid pro quo, and there's an awful lot of people that need to get into the Bedford High School gym this winter, because Allie was everywhere supporting field hockey, supporting soccer, supporting football, supporting volleyball. She was everywhere. She is a true student athlete that is a great representative of Bedford High.
And a great sports family as well, starting with Thomas all the way down to Eric Jr. So, yeah, it's a lot of fun.
I'll let you in on a little thing you might not know yet. Eric did that rare thing as a freshman. He made JV.
Did he really?
With over 60 young men trying out for the boys program. That's a very rare thing. And Eric made JV. He's going to be the next Morgan coming through that's going to do great things in Bedford.
Now, he's a lot of fun. And mom and dad obviously are great athletes too. So the apple not fall far. But, well, we appreciate the time. Good luck with the rest of your day, and we'll see you soon.
Very good. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, Coach.
Bye-bye.
That was Coach Kevin Gibbs of the Bedford High girls basketball team. He had his interview locked down. He was prepped, man.
Well, yeah, we sent him some questions.
Last night at about 9:30, we sent him questions. It wasn't like we gave him a whole lot of time to prep.
Well, 12 hours is plenty.
He knows his team.
But, I think he probably would have approached it that way even if we hadn't sent him questions. He's very organized, and it's really exciting to hear about the squad. You and I have seen a lot of these players. They're exciting players, and I'm looking forward to the first broadcast. We'll have the home opener next Friday night. We'll be doing that on TV and radio, and looking forward to doing hopefully 6 or 7 home games this year.
Now he's also got me interested too, as we go and think about players on rosters. All right, Eric Morgan Jr., who I used to refer to as Showtime when I was coaching him in Little League. There are just some players who kind of carry themselves like, hey, you know, I'm ready for everything. And you weren't with me last year watching the Lurgio Championship games. Eric's not a big kid and wasn't fazed by a whole lot. So it didn't surprise me. You know, I don't know if he's grown or not. I haven't seen him in the last few months, but, you know, they're just, some players are just ready and sort of expect that this is what they're going to get. And it's not a matter of getting it. It's a matter of earning it, but I'm curious to see what the roster for the boys looks like too. So we probably should hit Corey up and get our hands on some of that stuff so we can prep.
Absolutely.
It's fun. It's basketball season.
Yes.
So, all right. We'll take a quick break and we'll come right back and talk about a bunch of different stuff. I honestly didn't forecast the 31-minute first segment, but Kevin Gibbs knocked it out of the park or drained it from deep, depending on your sports metaphor. You are listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Welcome back to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Lauren Fox.
And Andrew Hansen.
And it's school still. You know, even though you think about like the last couple weeks before winter break and then the last few weeks of the school year where it seems like everybody from kids to teachers to everyone is kind of like, all right, get us out of here. Like we need a little bit of freedom. This is just the Lauren Fox public service announcement. If you're driving through what is obviously a bus stop with kids in it, it doesn't matter if you're late for whatever class you have or anything like that. Slow down.
Maybe even stop?
No. If there's no bus there, you don't have to stop. That would bring traffic to a standstill. What I'm talking more about is like, you know, there are six of us out there at the bus stop hanging out, waiting, and somebody may be late for like a jazzercise class. I don't know, but, you know, just... Yeah, and even me yelling at them, hey, slow down, lady, like, didn't even break stride. Like, you know, just be aware. Like, this is largely a suburban town, like, with the exception, and there are even bus stops on 101. But just be mindful. This is just in general for everybody who might be listening at 9 a.m. or 9:30, whatever, on a Saturday morning.
So this isn't a hypothetical.
No, it's not a hypothetical. It was like there were... So we're fortunate where we live in that if the kids miss the bus, they get two shots. Like, you really have to screw up to miss the bus because the bus goes by and then it drives around the circle, which is like 3 minutes, and then it comes back. And the bus drivers are always super nice and will always stop in case somebody missed it. Now, this week, the circumstance has been the bus is a little bit early, but I get that. Like, if there aren't kids to pick up, the bus is going to run early. It is what it is. But so this week, you had a handful of us on one side of the street and a handful of us on the other side of the street because we're getting everybody, you know, the kids, 80% of the kids in the neighborhood missed the bus because it was early. So we're on one side and somebody just... right through, split the uprights, and probably at about 40 miles an hour in what is a lane and a half wide of a street, particularly with snow. Like, so all I'm saying is for all of us, I know that we're all in a hurry. We all have somewhere to be, most of us. Just leave 2 minutes earlier. Like, I mean, seriously, the difference between driving 40 miles an hour and driving 33 miles an hour, which I'm aware Chief is still speeding, but it's less egregious than that. The difference isn't going to really get you anywhere all that much faster.
Yeah, you're probably not going to get through the next light.
No, particularly if you're driving in the back roads and there are no lights anyway, and chances are you're going to be behind a bus anyway. So that's all I'm saying. Just like realize we all have somewhere to be. We're all in a hurry. Leave a minute earlier. As my good friend Eric Lesniak used to say, set your clothes out the night before. Who does that? not this guy. But that's all. So anyway, speaking of splitting the uprights.
Yes.
See what I did there?
I was going to do it if you didn't.
The Patriots have... I love stories like this. I think that's no secret to anybody. Like, guys, 29 years old. And I mean, this has been like the latest trend in football. God, the guy who won the Ray Guy Award in the That was unintentional. In the NCAA is a former Australian rules kicker. USC has an Australian rules kicker, I think, who's a 27-year-old freshman at USC, which if I was going to reincarnate myself as something, I would either come back as a dog or a 27-year-old freshman at USC. but if who's Australian? But, I mean, that's become the thing. Kicking is, all right, maybe the air quotes American style of kicking isn't necessarily the way. Maybe it's the Australian style where you almost kind of have a kick option. And so now the Patriots have a guy on their practice squad, didn't go to college, or he may have gone to college, didn't play football in college, played soccer in Belgium and Italy, and is known as the trick shot kicker. Now, you watched probably both videos. Was there anything odd to you about those game videos? There were a few things.
Well, for the indoor football league.
This was outdoor. I didn't watch the indoor.
Oh, okay.
The kicking indoors is hard just because it's so tight. It's like kicking down a hallway.
Yeah, and the uprights are higher. The crossbar is higher.
Yes.
And the uprights are skinnier, more narrow. Well, in all of the game action I saw from his videos, the defensive linemen weren't trying to block the kick.
Okay, that was weird.
Yep.
That was one thing that was strange.
And I feel like in the indoor football league, there must be a rule that you can't try to block the kick.
Well, this was like some outdoor spring league where guys weren't moving, were basically waving at the football right. That was just going by. I thought that was bizarre. The other thing that was strange was he was doing directional kicks, and he did a directional kick to the right side of the field, and it got picked up and brought back about 50 yards. And I don't, like, the other thing that was funny in the spring league, and I'm not dialed into the machinations of football well enough to know this, but you had in that league guys down, I'm guessing it was like at the other 35-yard line. And so what that does is it makes it so that you're not starting from the 35 with this 30-yard head start and turning yourself into a missile. You're on the other 35, and you're not moving until the guy catches the ball, which is an interesting way to leave the kickoff intact in football. You still get the excitement of the kickoff, but you don't have guys who have reached top speed on the kick, which, who knows, maybe, you know, the same way that the baseball uses the Atlantic League, maybe that's a thing. So, I mean, that was kind of the odd stuff there. But then his trick shot kicking was just fun.
I mean, it's phenomenal. The guy's, not only does he have the power to kick 60, 65, 70-yard field goals.
Uh-huh.
But he's taking aim at these enormous light posts at a random field from, looks like, between 40 and 50 yards away.
Yeah.
And just drilling the pole.
Yeah. Which, if I'm the Bears, I wouldn't want to sign a kicker who seems to have, whose footballs seem to have a magnetic attraction to goalposts.
Yeah. Multiple goalposts per kick.
Doink, doink. Yeah, we were out there filming a video for an organization here in town on the turf at Bedford High, and one of my players from last year who also plays soccer said to me, "Hey, coach, watch this!" And from 35 yards out, hit the top crossbar square, called a shot. So,
Well, watching some of his trick kicks makes you wonder if they ever change the rules in the NFL for kicking. If they ever get wild and they award a bonus point, for example, for hitting an upright. Wouldn't that be kind of fun? If you try an extra point, if you make it, it's worth one. If you hit the upright, it's worth two.
What
would you do strategy-wise? Would you go for the upright?
No.
With your trick kicker?
I take my one all the time.
Take your one?
The other thing that would make more logical sense would be one right down the middle. Just a straight bar up the middle.
Oh, a third post. Doink. If you hit that, you get 2 points.
You hit that, you get the points, yeah. That rewards perfection. The other thing, and this goes back to kicking field goals and extra points, I appreciate that the NFL moved the extra point back because it was too automatic for these kickers. I do think that, and I don't think I've ever said this before here, and it's a really stupid idea, but I figure why not say it on the radio. I love the idea of having the player who scores the touchdown kick the extra point.
Yeah, okay.
So, well, because if you have a guy who can't kick, well, then you're disincentivized from having him score the touchdown. So, and like theoretically, it's a 20-yard field goal. Anybody should be able to hit that. You and I could go out and do that right now.
Yes, we could.
Yes. So that's all I'm saying. Like, get those guys out there and doing that. Lamar Jackson would have kicked six last night. Or no, he would have kicked one, and his receivers would have kicked five.
Which would unfortunately prevent us from watching Justin Tucker, who's probably the best kicker in the NFL.
I haven't really given any thought to kickers at this point, but all I know is that...
Even though we've been talking about them for about 10 minutes?
No. It's more the fascination of the clock in here doesn't work. I just realized. Like, it's really weird. It's been 11:55 for a while.
I mean, we're always in a time machine here, so it has to be stopped.
It does. It's right twice a day. No, so in thinking about Josh Gable, that's a fascinating thing that you... It would be such a Patriots thing. To do that. But the other...
To do what?
To grab a kicker who is, for all intents and purposes, he's not on the scrap heap. He's a great athlete and he kicks better than, I'm going to say, 99.99% of...
The world?
The world. But to grab this guy and turn him into something serviceable would be utterly Belichickian.
It would. But it's perfect. I mean, why wouldn't you? I mean... The Bears have to be watching those videos and hearing that he's on the Patriots practice squad thinking, why didn't we bring him in? I read an article in Sports Illustrated recently about the process they went through this summer and fall with their mini camps, with all the kickers they brought in. Most teams bring in three or four, and they brought in like 10.
It's too many choices. If I go to the grocery store or Costco, as an example... Costco has what? A couple choices of everything. And the reason they do that is because it helps people buy things because you're not sitting there thinking about things that are fringy things and going, well, I'm going to buy this because there are three options. If I am considering toothpaste and there are 30 options of toothpaste, it's like, forget it. You know, I'm not going to do it. And the same thing, or if I'm sharing a logo with a client, I'm not giving a client 10 options for a logo. Because the client just gets confused and says, I like this from this and that from that, and then I have Frankenstein logo. If I have 10 kickers that I'm evaluating there, the problem is it becomes really tough to tell, well, this guy's better on kickoffs. Well, this guy's better on the extra point. Well, this guy's better. Like, it's a paradox of choice. It becomes impossible to differentiate among them because, I mean, realistically, there isn't a whole lot of differentiation among those guys anyway.
Well, the funny thing is what the Bears were doing is they would only have them kick 43-yard field goals because that was the double doink.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Is that really true?
Yeah. I'll share the article with you. And that's what they did. They brought everybody
ridiculous.
In. They stopped practice and they said, go kick this 43-yard field goal. That's what we need. We need somebody who can kick a 43-yarder. So that's what they had them try out on.
Hey, like that's the other thing too. Like, to me, that's a really weird way of trying not to forget the past.
And that was the overall sentiment of really everyone involved was, okay, we get it, but this probably is not helping.
Uh-uh.
We need to move past this.
So the other fun thing about Josh Gable is he kicks for, or he at one point kicked for the Tucson Sugar Skulls, which if anybody's looking for a gift for me, I would love the gold Sugar Skulls shirt on their website.
Yeah, that name really jumped out at me when I was reading about
it, dude. The other piece that I guess goes into this, because the Patriots have tried very hard with Nick Folk and Mike Nugent to replace Gostkowski, who honestly, if you would have asked me his age before he got hurt, I would have said he's about 26, and I think he's that plus about 10.
Right.
Because it feels like he's been there forever. And the one who truly has been there forever is Adam Vinatieri. But it really makes you realize how having a kicker who is close to automatic, how big of a difference that makes for a team, for their strategy, when everybody tends to place an emphasis late in games on clock and every second mattering. But we spend time early in games like it really doesn't matter. Like the time just goes right like sands through the hourglass, so are the days of our lives. Like that happens early in games, and we do that like it doesn't matter. And there are a lot of plays early in games where, okay, well, it's fourth and one. If you have a guy who's automatic, you're going to take the points that are on the board there early because you need them. And that changes the complexion of a game later in the game when you have those 3 points that you gave up earlier. And maybe you didn't convert on that fourth down, or maybe you converted the fourth down but didn't actually turn the drive into any points. But having a kicker who is close to automatic really makes it so that your strategy in other parts of the game becomes far more foolproof.
It really does. And if you think about it, there's really three categories of kicker ability and team strategy that you can have. You've got the teams who have those automatic kickers that they can rely on to hit over 90% of their kicks, you know, basically be 100% inside 50 yards. And so that's a very select group, and they have an advantage. Then you've got the teams that have kickers that they don't really trust. And so then you see a lot of indecision when it's fourth and one, fourth and two at the 35. What are they going to do? And I do think it takes away from the team. And then the third category are teams like Baltimore, who have an excellent kicker, but you've got a coach in Harbaugh who's so aggressive on fourth down. You know, you'll see him even going for it on fourth and goal from the five, just because he has this incredible weapon in Lamar Jackson.
Right.
And that also is an advantage when you know you have your kicker, but you're also that confident in your offense that defenses don't really know how to prepare.
Right. And that's been one of the fun things about watching football become more metrics driven over the last decade or so. I'll go back. I mean, if I talk about him in the context of the Patriots, everybody hates him. If I talk about him in the context of USC, everybody loves him. Pete Carroll, who I still think is a guy, even though he disappointed me on Monday or Sunday, I think he's a guy who knows what he's doing, has a team that executes for him and believes in him. And he was one of the first to say, it's fourth down, I really don't care about a field goal. I'm going to take my yards and I'm going to convert it. Or if I'm on their side of the field, my defense is good enough that I'm just going to get the ball back soon enough anyway. And going back to those USC teams from the 2000s when you had, you know, the old Jets kicker Joe DiNello's son Mario was kicking for USC and making 50-something extra points a year and kicking a handful of field goals. You know, there have been changes in the game that have made it so that teams are able to really quickly look at the probability of converting a fourth down and a variety of other factors, whether it's they've got a drive that's been going on for a while and you name it. But they're looking at a variety of different things and saying, okay, we're going for it here, and kind of trusting the numbers as they, I think if you had talked to an NFL team 10 years ago about trusting the numbers on something like that, people would have looked at you like you had two heads.
It is fun. I do prefer it. The days of Phil Simms commentating and saying, punt, got a punt, got a punt, got a punt, every single time, even if it's fourth and one on the opposition's 38, you know, thankfully those days are mostly behind us.
Well, and you also, love him or hate him, Tony Romo is an upgrade over Phil Simms.
So no doubt about it.
So now you get that, where regardless of what you think about Tony Romo's delivery, Tony Romo's analysis is spot on. And I guess that'll take us to the next thing, which wasn't a topic on the list, but we're going to talk about it anyway. The Dallas Cowboys.
Okay.
This is fun.
What part of it? Their struggles?
Yes. It's
every
just,
week
it's just,
to dance in the media. Will Garrett make it through this week? Will he make it through that week?
Do you think he even cares anymore?
I think he's had enough of a run and made enough money that it's probably, and he knows that it's not his decision. So why worry about it? Just try to win the next game.
Right. And like at this point, I don't think there's a whole lot of excuse as to why they aren't winning. They're just not winning. And they, week after week after week, just lay an egg. It's absurd. But you have a team, somebody likened them. I was listening yesterday, or it was on TV, so I wasn't really watching, to the Al Davis-led Raiders near the end, where it was just win, baby, through the 70s, through the 80s, and then Al Davis became the personality bigger than the team, which is where Jerry Jones is. He really is the personality that's bigger than the team, where he's the one giving the news conference after the games. And that's, as much as he wants to do that because he likes the spotlight, now you're basically making it so that your players and coaches don't really have to be accountable. You're the one who's accountable.
Yeah, he's always had a little bit of a different role compared to other owners, where he's been more of the general manager. So he has opened himself up to that criticism, but I think he's comfortable with it. That's what he's done for a long time.
It'll be interesting to see. And I guess as long as we're talking about the marquee America's team, I'm not going to call the Yankees America's team, but...
But
they're kind of that. I would say the Yankees and the Red Sox, probably, if you went into most markets in America and said, outside of the home team, who are you a fan of? The Yankees and the Red Sox would probably be vying for number two everywhere.
Yeah, I think that's fair in general.
So
the Braves and the Cubs also get a little, they've had a bump.
The Cubs, yeah,
historically.
Braves, no, not now.
Well, not now, but yeah. Because of their networks.
Superstation, yeah.
Yeah.
But the Yankees are apparently all in. They signed Gerrit Cole to 9-324.
It just, you say it so calmly.
Yeah. We're going to pay this guy a third of a billion dollars. I had a friend.
9 years, too, for a pitcher.
I know. I had a friend text me yesterday. He was excited about it. And I said, here's the thing. You're going to get three or four good years out of him. So he's 29. So he'll get to 32, 33. He'll tear his UCL. He'll have Tommy John. He'll be, or, you know, shoulder capsule, something, who knows, because even the best of the best don't go 9 years straight without some kind of catastrophic injury of some sort. So shut him down for a year and a half, 2 years in the middle of that. And then you'll have three or four years at the end of it where he is a well above average pitcher, but it's not the same guy. It's a guy who has learned how to pitch. And then you say, is it worthwhile? The only thing that makes it worthwhile is if you win a couple championships out of that.
Right. And that's probably, they would certainly take that trade off. It's been long enough where they want to go all in, do whatever it takes. But yeah, I mean, you have to wonder, was it really necessary to go those extra years, 8 and 9, at $35 million per year plus?
If the difference is getting him versus not getting him,
yeah,
I get weird about this stuff simply because I can't objectively look at Scott Boras. And to me, there's always, okay, first of all, nobody can tell me there's any difference appreciably in your quality of life between $270 million and $320 million.
Right.
Like, at that point, it's funny money. It's money in the bank. It's generational money. You'll never spend all of it. Boras is now at a point where do I think Gerrit Cole cared? Do I think Gerrit Cole, who's a Southern California kid, might have preferred being a Dodger for slightly less money, slightly less time? Probably. Do I think having Scott Boras as his agent saying, this is a better deal for you and you pitch and I negotiate, which I don't know that that's what he said, but I'm assuming that that is. Do I think that that's, you know, most likely, yeah, sure. But I don't know. The whole thing is just, to me, it's bizarre. Like, I don't know. 9 years from, you're talking 2028.
When he's
like
38?
I mean, when he's 38, when my older kid is going to be graduated from college, Gerrit Cole will still be in Yankee Stadium. Or be getting a Bobby Bonilla deal from the Yankees where he's getting paid forever.
Or Jacoby Ellsbury.
He's
down in Florida for 2 years just practicing.
It's not, well, now you're at a point. So Fangraph's value is a win at $9 million. So if you are Gerrit Cole and you are worth 7 or 8 wins, now you're worth $63 to $72 million a year.
Wow. So they got him in a big discount.
Maybe. Who knows? And so then somebody looks at the Dodgers and says they signed Blake Treinen for 2 years, I think $10 million each year. Is that worth it? I don't see that as being a thing that's going to help the Dodgers bullpen appreciably at all. So I'd say no. But when you have $10 million seeming like a little contract.
Yeah, it sounds tiny.
Like, that's life-changing. If you won a lottery and $10 million was the prize, like, that changes everything. Like, you know, I'd probably still drive the same car, but, you know, wouldn't really think about taking it in for repairs or do something like forget my inspection. Whoops.
Yeah, it's like, well, now it's like an average contract in MLB and or the NBA.
Yeah, it's and it's gotten crazy. And I guess part of it, you can look all the way back to a guy who just got inducted into the Hall of Fame, Marvin Miller, who was the player attorney back in the 70s. But, you know, to read about it now, there are a lot of gambles that were made along the years by the players, and a lot of players who you might not have thought would have been on the same side of some of those things. But you have Jim Bunning, who was a longtime senator from Kentucky, who was really big on the labor negotiations. And when you look at some of the numbers back then, it's almost comical when the minimum salary, like, they negotiated year one, I think the minimum salary went from $10,000 a year to $15,000 a year. You know, now the average salary is what, $5 million?
Yeah, I think it's a little over five, and 10 is the NBA.
Yep.
And that came into the news with the unfortunate news about Commissioner Stern with the brain hemorrhage yesterday. We're taping this on Friday, so I haven't heard any updates this morning, but hopefully he'll be okay. But, you know, in the last 24 hours, people have been talking about the impact he had on the NBA and how when he came in, as Charles Barkley put it, average salary was like $250,000, and now it's about $10 million.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's just grown the game to incredible levels that, you know, they were chatting about last night. Nobody would have ever predicted.
Well, he also had the benefit of some great timing. And, you know, there it's the Branch Rickey quote, luck is the residue of design. You have to consider he got lucky with some guys. He got lucky with Larry Bird in Boston. He got lucky with Magic being in L.A. And you think now about the contract that Magic signed in 80 or 81, where it was 25 years, $25 million, and how absurd that seemed. And what's he going to be doing in 25 years? Well, turns out Magic's worth hundreds of millions at this at this point, and had an ownership share of the Lakers and all that sort of stuff. And but you look at Larry and Magic, and then that giving way to Michael Jordan, and one thing leads to another, and it leads to the guy who everybody thought was going to be the heir apparent, Zion Williamson, who now the projection is that he's not going to play until 2020.
That's unfortunate if that's how it plays out. I haven't heard any news in the last 24 hours. Have they given any more insight into his actual injury?
They said it was a torn meniscus that he had surgery on. But, you know, for most people, a torn meniscus that gets operated on, it's an arthroscopic surgery. It's not the most invasive thing. It's a few weeks of rehab and then you're back at it. But I think what they are most cautious about in the case of Zion is, you don't want to have him be a Sam Bowie or a Greg Oden out of this. Like, if it is required that you have him sit a little bit longer, you have him sit a little bit longer, even though the Pelicans are what I saw, I think 5-17.
Yeah, I think I was going to say 6-19. I think they've lost maybe even like 10 in a row. They've hit a real cold streak. I think that certainly has to influence that decision if they sit him for the rest of the year, because they had designs on making the playoffs. And they certainly could have with that roster if he'd been healthy. But now, with the season basically in the tank, you know, they're certainly thinking, well, let's, instead of rushing him back, risking injury again, let's really get him healthy and get him in tip-top NBA shape so he's ready for next year.
Would have been a good move to take the under on the number of wins. Just saying.
Yep, it would have.
So, anyway, well, thank you for listening. To everybody who's out there, thank you to Coach Kevin Gibbs of the Bedford High girls basketball team, and to Harry Kozlowski, Bill Jennings, Colin Richardson, George Cox here at the station, my co-host Andrew Hansen. I think we'll do a show next week. Yeah, why not?
If you're in town.
I'm in town. We'll do it next Thursday. So anyway, thank you again. Great week. You've been listening to, I usually say something else, and now I'm just tripping over my words. Have a great sports week. You've been listening to Fox on Sports for now on Bedford 105.1.